Marilyn Horne, who for decades was one of the opera world's most celebrated mezzo-sopranos, will turn 76 years old later this week, and she'll be celebrating her birthday at Carnegie Hall, as she's done for the past 7 years, with a mini-festival that honors the art of the vocal recital. The festival, which runs from the 19th through the 22nd, will include both recitals and masterclasses by Ms. Horne and special guests, and I'm very pleased that this series, called The Song Continues, has brought Marilyn Horne back to our show today. Hello.
Delighted to be here.
Is it a coincidence that this vocal festival coincides with your birthday?
It sure is no coincidence. It's planned, because when I started the festival, when I started the foundation, in 1994, I wanted it to have some extra pizzazz to it, so we celebrated my 60th birthday. And here we are, right? So,
well, let's hope we go into
it's a marketing,
many, many more festivals.
Thank you. Marketing tool was to put it on my birthday, and it was on a Sunday that year, and so it was just great because it was 105. It was 5 degrees outside, and so nobody wanted to leave, and it was one of the longest concerts probably ever. But I remember my brother said to me afterwards, well, shorter than Schindler's List, but as long as Gone with the Wind.
Didn't you start the Marilyn Horne Foundation to encourage and support the art of vocal recital? Does vocal recital need foundation support?
It needs everything, because it's one of the most, I hate to use the word dangerous, but I keep using it, and most dangerous offshoots of the whole classical world that is very difficult to put on these days.
And it's an endangered species?
That's what I called it right from the beginning, an endangered species. And we, and it's such a wonderful form of music. It's just a great showcase for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of songs.
I'm assuming there are fewer vocal recitals today than there were when you began your career.
Many fewer. When I was a young singer starting out, I could, after the word sort of went out that maybe I was a decent singer and a recitalist, I could have 20 or 30 recitals a year. Now we can't even get one for a young singer.
Are we talking major cities or
yes,
everywhere?
We're talking major and minor, even harder. But because if they put on any recitals, if anybody's doing that, or if there's a concert organization that maybe has 5 events a year, they're going to bring somebody who's famous, who can sell tickets. So where does the young artist come in? So somebody had to help to shore that up, and that's what my foundation did.
And a recital allows the young artist to show off all of his or her abilities in a way that even a great opera might not.
You're so accurate, because that was one of the things that I said right from the get-go when I was young. Oh, I love singing recitals because I can show everything that I can do. I couldn't add an aria to a recital if you want to. I mean, it's not considered kosher in the hoity-toity circles, but listen, we have to do that to really turn on the audience, too. And then they'll come back, and they'll learn a lot about Schubert and Schumann and Debussy and Ravel and all that.
Well, since some of the greatest music was written as songs, absolutely, not as operas, where else could we hear these things other than on recordings?
Or in your living room if you're doing it yourself, which is, of course, what they had to do when these songs were written.
They would do them small performances for friends
and family. Friends in a salon. They were not performed publicly in those days, the songs of Schubert and Schumann, let's say. But gradually, they sort of morphed into some kind of a concert hall, and that's what we have today.
Do you have any idea how many recitals you've performed in your career?
I've stopped counting at about 1,300.
Well, that's an awful lot. But then when you stopped singing in opera houses, did you stop doing recitals as
no,
well?
No, I continued on. I stopped singing opera in 96, and I continued on for several years singing recitals and orchestral concerts, too.
Of course, many of the things that people sing at recitals are from operas.
Yes.
It's just like a kind of a greatest hits experience sometime.
Right, right. In my case, I always love to start a recital with Handel arias, and they're, of course, they're all from operas of Handel.
Your foundation is based in New York City,
yes.
quite close to Carnegie Hall. How
right.
many young singers in your foundation currently is your foundation working with?
You know, I don't have that figure, but we have, I can tell you that we have had 114 exceptionally gifted singers who we present in recitals and education programs around the country. And then we've had, you know, many, many people. I've noticed that so many of our recitalists are now becoming stars in opera and the Met and in recital tour, of course.
Well, when I was much younger, they actually used to broadcast the Metropolitan Opera auditions.
They still do.
Oh, they do?
Oh yeah.
I just haven't
sure.
heard them recently.
They come in the spring. Oh, yeah, that's absolutely.
But what is the audition, what are auditions like
for us? Well, the ones that we are very much zeroed in on are we bring in singers from various music schools throughout the country, and they come and audition. These are the people who are really still students, and they audition to be in our master classes that we present starting next week. We have three master classes, one with James Levine, one with Warren Jones, and one with myself. And we bring them in for, I think it's 5 days in New York. And they not only get to come to everything that we're doing in our festival, but they get to experience New York. And they obviously they go to the Met and Carnegie Hall and absolutely love it. And that is all at our expense. And we also have some seminars and things that where we talk to them and try to help them out.
Are they open to the general public as well, the master classes and the seminars?
They absolutely are. They're coming up next week. And on the 19th, we have James Levine in Zankel Hall at 7:30. Then we have Warren Jones the next evening in Weill Hall. That's the 20th. And I'll be doing the 21st in Weill Hall.
You've been teaching in Santa Barbara for the past 15 years.
Yes.
That's regular college
courses? A little longer than that. I'm sorry?
That's at the Music Academy of the West.
Absolutely. I'm the chair of the vocal department. It's a wonderful, marvelous summer school that a lot of people maybe don't know about. We have about 135 students counting instrumentalists. So we have 23 vocalists. And I call it the Rolls Royce of summer schools because we're pretty proud of what happens there and what we do. And the most exciting thing is that about 10 years ago, or maybe even 12, the whole school went full scholarship. Everybody gets in on merits alone.
Are great singers born great, or can a good singer become a great one with the right instruction?
You got to have the voice. You can't go out and buy it. You can't say, oh, I want to see if I can sing. You know, a lot of people may have a voice and don't know it, but that's usually not the case. Usually the voice becomes evident in childhood of some kind. If not in childhood, it's going to start, you know, with puberty or just a little later. There are the odd people who play the clarinet and suddenly decide that, oh, somebody says, you know, you've got a voice. That's odd. But as I said, you've got to be born with it. You can't get it any other way.
And many opera singers have told me that it takes a while to really develop them completely, that they don't come into their own until they're in their later 20s, early 30s.
Absolutely, absolutely. Some people come in earlier because it's just the nature of the beast. But, real development, I've noticed, interesting, I put my finger on 26 as the age when suddenly singers really start to mature.
My guess is Marilyn Horne. She's written a memoir called The Song Continues with Jane Scofield, which also includes a CD. It's published by Baskerville. And she will be celebrating her birthday, as she has for the past 7 years, so this time the 76th birthday.
Yeah, well, this is one of the miracles on earth, to be 76.
At Carnegie Hall, in the series called The Song Continues. Although you're generally classified as a mezzo-soprano, haven't you sung many different types of music during your career?
Oh, yeah, everything. You name it, I've sung it. And I always tell my students, don't pattern your career after me.
Why?
Because it's hysterical when I look back at it, because I did everything. I sang from the time I was a child. My first appearance in public was just beyond 2 years of age. And I just think that's quite hysterically funny, because I have grandchildren and I have a daughter, and I know what they were doing it to. So I figured it out, though, that it was because of Shirley Temple.
But is there a problem, for example, when young ballet wannabes go up on toe too young, they develop all the wrong muscles?
Absolutely. There's the danger of just losing the whole thing is there. But I had a father who was very attentive in watching over what I did, and when I started taking lessons at 5, which is another hysterical quote, but my father said, don't touch that natural placement, that kind of thing. And then also, remember, in my day, I sang a lot of pop music as well as classical all at the same time. In my day, you could sing the popular music of the day. It's not the same as today, where there's so much belty involved. Yeah. Belting is rough on singers.
I remember when Ed Sullivan used to have Helen Trowell or people like that come on the show and they'd sing a pop song. It always sounded a little strange to me, because their voice just seemed so perfect for the operas that they performed.
But you see, even Helen was, you know, many generations ahead of me. My generation, we grew up singing the pop songs. So I'm deigning to say that I sing pop songs in the style of pop, not as an opera singer.
And do you think that once a great pianist told me that he grew up in California listening to the Beach Boys, and he knew it was there somewhere, even when he was playing Brahms or Bach or Beethoven.
Sure, sure. But I was actually doing it, yeah. And then I did a tremendous amount of film work from the time I was 12, background music.
Did you sing for Dorothy Dandridge?
Yes, of course.
And that was your first professional job in Carmen Jones?
No. I was a long time a professional. I was 20 years old when I did that movie.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You dubbed Dorothy Dandridge's voice.
Yeah, that was
voice.
The great Carmen Jones movie of Otto Preminger.
And that was before you actually started performing on the major opera stages?
I was just starting opera that year. Because, again, my dear father said, no opera until you're advanced a bit. So I went, I went in slowly into opera. And then by the 22, I was in Germany in an opera house.
But theories change. Years ago, a major opera star insisted on whispering when he was a guest on the show. I've heard that actually might hurt your voice.
You're right. You've got good information. In fact, a really good throat doctor, an ENT, can tell if you've been whispering the day before.
But he felt that he had to preserve his voice.
Well, there's the way to preserve your voice is not talk at all. Right.
Well, you've had a hip and two knees replaced.
Oh, thank you very much.
Is that a result of your performing career?
That and other things, probably.
Well, is opera more physically demanding than the audience might imagine?
Oh, much, much more physically demanding. Sure.
You got to keep on throwing yourself on the stage.
Yeah, and you normally these days, and in my time, you're on a rake too, and that takes a real toll on your knees to stand on that rake all night. And there's no question that people don't realize that an opera singer is half artist and half athlete.
Now, you quit, as you said, in 1996, quit performing operas.
Mm-hmm.
Were you feeling a difference in your voice, or was it...
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, come on. You know, you start to... In my case, I felt that the high notes were going. And I did, you know, by that time, I think maybe I was thinking, it's time anyway. I've been at this so long. And it's time to just, you know, what I could say, make a nice slide into something else. And, you know, I'm so fortunate that I slid right into teaching. I had no plans to be a teacher. I finally started a little master classes and things like that. And it was clear that I maybe had a gift for that.
So it had nothing to do with the sort of thing that actresses complain about, that there are fewer parts for women as they get older.
I could be singing the character parts if I wanted to, but I'm so much happier teaching. I just find great fulfillment in it. It's hard, but I do think that I have something to say, and it's just really an enormous pleasure to be. Look, you just said my age at 76 to be really active. I go to many universities for residencies throughout the year. Oklahoma University, I've been going for 13 years.
Well, if you'd been younger, you might not have met some of the really interesting and important people you'd met, like Igor Stravinsky.
Well,
when
that
you were
was
young.
Certainly a big person to get to know personally and interact with, you know, on a personal level. He was a great friend, and people are still amazed when they see that I knew Stravinsky so well.
You mentioned that you started singing in a small opera company. That was the Gelsenkirchen Opera.
Gelsenkirchen. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, right.
You were offered the New York City Opera was interested in you. Why did you decide to go to Germany instead?
I had that bee in my bonnet because I had so many wonderful teachers in Los Angeles who were refugees from Hitler. Mm-hmm. And it was our gain, and they all felt that the way to make an opera career was the old system in Germany, especially where you start in a provincial opera house and work up to a Staatstheater.
And nowadays, many opera singers would not survive if not for their careers in Europe. Are more recitals being performed
in Europe? It's
tough
over there, too. It really is. Recitals have been really tough over there for years. In fact, I can remember some of the recitals that I did in various big cities where they said, we are totally amazed that you have this huge audience.
Because they're just not drawing. Well, is the problem that classical music just doesn't draw the kind of audience it did in the past?
I don't know. Did it in the past? I mean, I don't know those figures.
Well, the old days, as I mentioned Ed Sullivan, and I when I think back to the popular culture, operas were performed regularly on television. Opera singers appeared regularly on the regular variety shows.
Right.
I remember Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. They would have some famous opera singer come
sure.
on.
Sure. I did a lot of that myself. And you know, even Johnny Carson's show, I was on it many, many times.
Can't imagine that today. Jay Leno does not have opera singers
Mm-mm.
anymore.
I saw Renee Fleming recently on Craig Ferguson. Is that his name?
I guess.
Hysterically funny guy that's on at 1:30 or something.
That's past my bedtime.
I'm a night owl, dear. And he's really good. And she just sang a song. And there was no interchange between her. You know, I used to sit and talk to Johnny. And that was big stuff in this country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he once, I was about to sing in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he always announced where you're going to appear to help you out, right? So he said, Marilyn will be appearing on such and such a date very soon in St. Paul. And they told me when I got there that the next day it sold out. That was very, very big stuff. I was on the Ed Sullivan Show, too, you know. So I was, old enough that I managed to get on there. But
they don't invite people.
But we don't have
opera singers on Saturday Night Live.
No, I don't think so. I did. No.
Maybe
that,
opera singers are too
I
funny.
I did David Letterman a few times, yeah. Had a lot of fun with that.
Did you speak German when you moved to Germany?
Oh, of course. I learned to speak German.
How well do you have to understand a language
in order to sing
an opera in that language?
I think you really need to speak them, the languages you sing in. There is a whole understanding and a whole flavor of the language that you get when you speak it. A lot of singers do not.
Well, you have to learn Italian then. French,
right.
German,
right.
Russian.
Russian, I'm afraid I've only done phonetically. I don't really speak Russian, but I loved singing in what little Russian I did.
and you still understood what you were singing.
Well, of course, because I translated everything. And so you relate in your head to this word that, you know, this means love or this means death or that kind of thing.
Are some languages easier to sing in? I would think that Italian and French are more musical than German or Russian or English.
Yeah, what you have to do is relate your bel canto technique, as it were, and I mean that as, you know, beautiful singing. You've got to relate it to the language, especially German, because when I was in Germany, I sang everything in German, including La Bohème, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to relate how to sing the language and not have those consonants killing you, except to be understood.
You have been a proponent of supertitles.
I am such a proponent of I can't tell you, but I, and also we are the first, as far as I know, the only recital organization that has supertitles in our recitals.
Now, how did you wind up connecting with Rossini? You, in 1981, the Rossini Foundation awarded you a plaque dedicated to the greatest Rossini singer in the world.
Listen, I fell into it in many ways. I think that I have been a very lucky person, that certain things have happened in my life that have led me to where I should be. And I had already sung La Cenerentola, Cinderella, of Rossini when I was 22 in Los Angeles. And I have to say it was very successful, but I was on the road of a soprano in those days. I didn't consider myself a mezzo because I sang so damn young. Mm-hmm. Nobody's a mezzo when you're 5 years old, right? And so I was sticking with that. Didn't know that I had sung something very special. I had, remember, great reviews and all of that. And then I went on my road to Germany and sang all soprano when I was there.
Well, you can keep your voice in a certain range, or you can bring it down to a different range, can't you?
Depends on what kind of a voice you've got. In my case, I was fortunate that I had a big range. And I remember that the lower part of my voice arrived when I was 15 years old. I did nothing for it. Suddenly I could sing low.
How did you assemble the artists who'll be performing in The Song Continues? For instance, Sasha Cooke, who'll be singing on Wednesday the 20th. She's been a guest on our show. How did you
I've known Sasha since she was 18. She came to the Music Academy of the West, and I taught her there. And we've certainly had our eye on her, and I've kept in contact with her. She sung quite a bit for my foundation. Recently was on a cruise with us where she sang practically every day, and I got to hear her a lot. She's a delightful, beautiful person and with a beautiful voice.
Marilyn Horne, the festival called The Song Continues. We'll be celebrating her 76th birthday later this week. It runs the 19th through the 22nd. Which day is your birthday?
My birthday is this coming Saturday, the 16th. I said, we've got to take it off of the birthday. We can't have it on there all the time. It's like I need to have happy birthday sung to me in public.
You've had that enough times. The ticket information is on our show page at WNYC.org. There's also a book called The Song Continues by Marilyn Horne with Jane Scoville. It includes a CD, and it's published by Baskerville.
I think you can perhaps find it in the Met gift shop, and certainly
it's
Amazon.
It's semi-out of print.
Amazon has it, too.
Thank you so much for being with us.
You're so nice to have me here. Thank you so much, and thanks for staying 25 years. This is just great.